You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Hey, if you missed a segment of the show, make sure that you check out the Dana and Parks podcast. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. You had some new genetic testing?
I just got an email that said, you know, they're trying to get you to subscribe to the higher premium version of in any of these services. And you know this, many years ago, Scott and I, was it Christmas? I'm trying to remember what we did it for. We were like, let's go ahead and do the swab and do the 23andMe. Just see what we get. And
mine was accurate.
Yeah, it was very accurate. But it didn't tell me a lot. It told me that I don't have that weird gene that makes cilantro tastes like dish soap. It told me, you know, it's just a lot of kind of weird things. I did find out I do not have the Alzheimer's gene, which does not mean you're not going to get Alzheimer's. I also don't have the
just
big bad.
You're not predisposed
yeah,
to do it.
I don't have the big bad breast cancer gene, which also doesn't mean you're not going to get breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So I haven't spent a lot of time looking any of this stuff up. But you get an email every once in a while that says, you know, you have 242 new relatives. Most of them are like fifth cousin, four times removed. I don't recognize the names, the cities. I think you could probably legally have a child with some of these people, and it wouldn't. Your child would be perfectly healthy. That's how
wouldn't come out with three
eyes.
That's
how far down the tree that these things go. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not. Sorry that I did it, but I, you know, are you?
No, I'm not sorry. I found it interesting. I was 88% English Irish, which I pretty much already knew, a little French, a little German. But what I found fascinating about 23andMe is I went on the site like 2 or 3 years ago. You remember this?
Yeah.
And it was telling me all the people around the country that I was related to.
I don't know any of these people. And even the closest to me on the tree, I don't have any idea
who these
people
are. How many of them
have
the last name right?
None.
Exactly.
None.
Exactly. When I went and looked at 23andMe and went and looked at all the people around the country that I was somehow related to, none of them had the last name Parks. None.
Your name truly does die with you. Yeah, I'm looking. I have no, I don't know who any of these people are. Is it interesting to, I guess? I'm going to be honest. You know what I think most people are curious about? We always had that one cousin that didn't really seem to fit in.
And you're trying to figure out if you're actually related to them? Well,
or is, you know, maybe I've had this happen to several people I know, and I do not mean one. I mean, several people I know went through this whole thing and found a whole side of a tree they did not know existed. Or maybe you are not exactly the percentage you should be equal to your siblings. Like that kind of thing.
Because you come from somewhere else.
Or you were adopted and no one ever said anything. Or there was an oops baby back in the 60s or the 70s.
A good looking mailman, you know what I'm
Scott,
saying?
Scott, you would be shocked how many people figure that out.
I've got an older sibling somewhere.
Wait, do you know this because of the ancestry stuff, Dan, or is because someone told you?
No, because my father finally told me.
Okay.
By the way,
is he still with us?
Your mom, when she was younger in college,
yeah,
had to give a baby up.
Had to give a baby up, which, Dan, was so common.
Yes, it was.
Back in those days. And you know what else was common? No one ever talked about it after that happened.
Yeah, I've been on this planet. I was on this planet 55 years before my dad was like, can I tell you something? I'm like, yeah, please tell me. He's like, well, I don't know how you're going to react. I'm like, I'm going to be fine. What? And he told me, I'm like, oh, wow. How about that?
Well, aren't you curious?
I'm very curious, and I haven't followed through with it yet, but I'm very curious.
Does he know? Is it a boy or a girl?
I do not believe that we know.
Okay.
I mean, he might.
Do you know where this person is?
No.
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 Dan, I will tell you, I was 40 when I learned I had a new cousin, another cousin. And when my mom and dad were, I think it was my mom who said something about it. First, she goes, we told you that. And I go, no, I would have remembered that story. You most certainly did not. She goes, well, I just would have sworn you knew that. She said, yeah, I got a call the other day from somebody that said, I think I'm looking for, is this so-and-so? And I think I'm looking for so-and-so. And my mom just said, welcome home.
I may have actually met the person. Actually, now that I think about it, we did visit. We did visit a family in Canada.
With no explanation?
Well, they were just family friends, and as we were passing.
Oh, they were friends, all right.
I doubt it, Dan, because I'm telling you, you know, back in the day, people just, when those things happened, and they did happen frequently, you just, I don't think the women ever moved on, but you just kind of moved on.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, from the text line. I will never take one of those tests. I came from Iowa, and I'm terrified my family's tree is more like a circle.
Haven't I told you guys I have someone that I know very, very well, one of the handful of people that this has happened to, and he or she was always terrified of dying young because their dad died very young, like heart attack, unhealthy, high cholesterol, right? So this person spent their entire life only eating kale and running and working out. Like
I'd rather die young.
One of the most fit people I know, okay?
Sounds awesome.
Because, you know, he just said, I lost my dad at an early age. Does the 23andMe. His father, of course, long passed. And his dad...
is not his dad.
Is not his biological father. And in fact, Biodad lived to age 99. I'm like, get out of the gym.
I'm going to McDonald's.
You've got great genes. You had no idea.
Would it bother you to find out if you took one of these tests, and I know you already have, but if you found out later in life that Craig was not your biological father?
I would be like, what? It wouldn't bother me, but I would be like...
I mean, he would still be your dad.
Oh, of course. My journalist brain, though, would be like, tell me everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just tell me everything. I want to know. I want to know everything.
You know, I've told you, my mom, growing up, always thought that Stephen Dunstan was her dad. And then her older brother, Stephen Dunstan, I think I'm getting her dad's name right. We were living in Lansing, and the phone rings, and it's my uncle on the phone. He's 15 years her senior, and he said, Margaret, I have something I have to tell you. And
how old was she at the time?
She was in her well into her 40s, probably 44, 45.
Yeah.
And by the time we moved to Lansing, And her brother said, I know something that you need to know. And Mr. Dunstan was not your father. Your real father was named something McDade.
Did it bother her?
No.
Because what I've heard from people is other things start making sense then. Like if some of them have said, and not all of them, but I always felt like something wasn't quite right. My whole life, I couldn't put my finger on it.
We always assumed, Stephen Dunstan, I think that's his name, Stephen Dunstan died when my mom was like 3 years old, and my grandmother had another relationship, from which my mother came, and she never suspected anything was different or weird or odd.
But because who she thought was her dad passed when she was very, very young.
3 years, yeah.
Does she even have any memories of that?
I don't think
man?
So. I don't think so.
So. Is that less shocking than when you hear that the guy that you've just sort of been told that you don't even remember was your dad is not your dad? Is that somehow less jarring? And I don't know the answer to that.
I would have to think so.
I would think.
You know, you didn't know him. There was no relationship. But that's who you thought your dad was. And then you later learn that you never even really knew who your father was. And he ended up moving from New York to Missouri, of all places. And died long before my uncle told my mom,
yeah,
here's who your real dad is.
It would just spark great curiosity in me.
And I hate the term real dad. That's not
fair. I know,
I know. That's not fair.
It would spark a lot of curiosity, sure.
Bio dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 913-586-7798, 586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott, here on KMBZ. Oh, I love a good history lesson.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to have you back, Diane Houston, historian.
Our favorite historian. Hello. Educator of all and many. And every time you come on the program, we learn about 10,000 new things we didn't know about Kansas City. So, Diane, you reached out to me a couple weeks ago, and you said, hey, would you like to have Coach Reed's wife on the program? And I said, well, yeah, we would always like to talk to Tammy Reed. Sure. What's going on? And you said, well, it's a fundraiser and we want to talk about it. And then you sent me a link to one of the most beautiful homes. You know, I love historic. You know, I love old. I look at the crown molding and the doors and it just makes me swoon. Tell us first about this historic house.
So the Harris Kearney House was built in 1855, and it was actually originally at the corner of Main and Westport Road. Westport Road, if you've ever noticed, like, have you ever noticed when you're down in Westport, the streets feel like they're crooked. Not running, they're crooked.
Yeah.
It's because it was actually platted to the Santa Fe Trail, not north, south, west, east. So that's why the streets are like that. So this house originally sat right on the Santa Fe Trail. So that would have been an amazing view back in those days, you know, like talk about just, apparently they had like pet peacocks and things in their front yard. And the house was just, it was a showstopper. And in today's standards, I would say it's not like a mansion, but for that time period, it would have been.
Oh, sure it would have been.
And it was built by enslaved labor, and the house is it's the oldest two-story brick house in Kansas City. And what's amazing about it is, because, you know, I always say Kansas City loves to tear things down.
Yes.
And this house was going to hit the bulldozers for sure back when they were really revamping. You know, Westport was annexed to Kansas City in the 1890s. You know, businesses wanted to take over, and we had lost there's Harris House Hotel, which was right across the street from Kelly's where McCoy's used to be.
Yeah.
Okay. And they owned this brick structure that all these people would stay at and travel and all this. That's how they made their money, is they were hotel owners. And that got knocked to the ground in 1921, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so the Daughters of Old Westport were freaked, like, we can't let this house be destroyed. They wanted to destroy it to build new buildings. And so they actually raised the funds to hoist that thing up in 1922 and move it to 4000 Baltimore.
Okay.
Up a hill.
Moved a house.
Moved the house.
Plopped it down somewhere else to save it.
Absolutely. And that, it's unbelievable. 1922, we have pictures of that.
That's crazy.
Super wild that it actually survived that. And so you can imagine they built a basement around it so they could put the house back together again, because they cut it in half. It has an L addition in the back that was built in the 1870s. Huh. And so they cut the house down that line, and then they moved both sections separately.
So the house is now a museum.
It is.
And tell us, it looks like there's like a cannon out back. What is it significant with respect to the Battle of Westport?
A lot of people love the Battle of Westport, and it is, the house itself wouldn't have been involved with the Battle of Westport, but of course the whole community was involved because of the size of the battle and all of that in 1864. So what's significant, of course, we think Battle of Westport, we think it was fought in the streets, you know, like a slaughterhouse. That's not what happened. The battle was really more south, like toward Luce Park, and then over east, like where Forest Hill and Calvary Cemetery
which
are.
Which at the time would have just been open fields.
Absolutely. Farmland. Yeah. And I mean, nothing was out there except for like Seth Ward's home and stuff like that, where Ward Parkway is.
Yeah.
So that's where the real battle kind of underway. And there were 2 days of battle. But the people who lived in Westport, a lot of them, because that hotel was like one of the tallest structures, they actually went and watched the Battle of Westport from up there.
From the hotel.
Literally, like, they let their children, like, yeah, sure, go take a look.
Right?
like that was a sight to see.
You can hear the cannons.
Men are getting slaughtered. Go take a look.
Absolutely. So this house, it doesn't have, you know, Warnell Majors, or I should say the Warnell House was used as a field hospital during the Battle of Westport. This was not. But there was some occupation of the hotel by Union soldiers during the Civil War.
Wow.
So there's a real connection to, of course, Westport and the overall history. It's crazy. I mean, Westport's just, it's older than Kansas City. It was, you know, platted in 1833. So we got to save the oldest two-story brick home in Kansas City.
Is the home in disrepair now?
It's not that it's in disrepair. It's just, I mean, I know you've been fixing up a house, right?
Oh, it's, yeah.
It's something, you know, because if you decide to take out down, say, wallpaper and you're going to restore that, there's going to be a problem behind it with plaster or there's going to be shoring that needs to be done. And so these aren't real sexy repairs, as I like to say it. It's not like it's going to, you know, it's going to be HGTV and you walk in and it's a whole new home. This is literally structural things that need to be done.
Nor would you want it to be that.
Well, we're on the National Register, so we can't just go in and do whatever we want. We're just trying to preserve the home. And there was just a lot of expensive repairs, for sure.
Okay, so enter Coach Andy Reid and the coach's coach, his wife, Tammy Reid, that we will bring in now. I love that they refer to you as the coach's coach. And Tammy, thank you so much for your time and for joining us.
For having me.
You are so welcome. What is it about this house specifically? You guys have put up a lot of your own money to help restore it and do the repairs that are needed. What is it about this that has interested you and Coach so much?
Well, it started with me and some quilts, and then it just got bigger and bigger. But when you see this house and you hear about the history, I don't know why people wouldn't want to preserve something that's been here so long. And it is the oldest two-story brick house. So that's where we come in. Coach loves history, and he was like, this is amazing. I'm like, yeah. I mean, he could sit for hours and listen to stories about any history thing. So if I ever get him and Diane together, it'd probably be like a 12-hour dinner.
It would be.
I'd be okay with that.
And you guys are doing a burgers and brats event. Tell us about that.
We are. Well, I don't know how that came about exactly. We were just chatting with Mari, and she's like, oh, maybe we should do something at the house. And I'm like, sure. And Coach loves to barbecue. So we're like, why not brats and burgers? Why, you know, invite some people and maybe make some money and build our capital campaign so that we can keep repairing this house and get it back to its rightful place in, you know, history and back to where it is really well tended. That's what we need, is just some repairs. So Coach said, I'm game. And so we're coming out, and we would love for everybody to buy tickets and come see us and chat with us for a little bit, maybe eat a brat or a burger. And we have lots of great people that have donated food and drinks for it. So,
and he's going to be grilling the burgers. Did I read that?
Heck yeah. He can grill burgers and brat.
We're sticking him on a Weber. I'm not giving him gas.
He's done that for our family for 45 years, so why not the community, you know?
Well, how do people get information about how to take part in this event? Man, it would be an honor to have, don't take this the wrong way, to have Coach Reid cook me a burger. That'd be pretty awesome.
So the website where you can get tickets is www.westporthistoricalkc.org. And then you can click on events and you'll see it there. It's the featured event. And there's also a great video on there that we made of Coach and Coach of the Coach talking about the event, which was super fun to put together.
Well, we know how busy you guys are, Tammy, building another Super Bowl championship team. And so we appreciate your time today and yours and the coach's time for the event. And we'll put it on all of our social media channels and just appreciate all you guys do for the town.
Thank you. And thank you for promoting it for us. We can't do it without y'all. So thank you.
Which city is better, Philadelphia or Kansas City?
Kansas City. Hello. We love it here. It's calmer, less traffic, lots of pros here. I'll tell you that.
Well, we love having you here.
The coach's coach, Tammy Reid, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. Thanks, y'all.
Can you stick around?
Diane, we got to have you stick around. Every time you're here, I'm like, just start talking about history. I want to hear about all of it. Go.
Oh, I could stick around for a bit.
Okay. All right. Diane Houston, local historian, joining us here on Dana and Parks. One of our favorites, Diane Houston, local historian, is joining us in studio, and they are doing a fundraiser to save, what's the name of the home again?
The Harris Carney House.
Harris Carney Museum House.
Like Carney, as in Carney, Missouri. Same guys.
And when you said, by the way, she walked in, you guys off the air, and I said, 40th and Baltimore, 4,000. I go, I'm going to need a reference here for the house. And you said, right across from
Brides. Right across from Pride's. Like, Pride's uses our parking lot sometimes on the weekends. So, yeah, it sits right there, and it's kind of just up that hill, you know, right by the new streetcar stop.
How much history is literally all around us that we drive by every single day, and you never think, like, what is that, or what, you know, people probably drive by that house and have no idea what it is.
Well, a lot of people don't. And because it's a little off the beaten path, people aren't getting like exposed to as much. If it was still sitting where it originally sat, it would be something people talked about. It's not like on Warnell, like Warnell's houses and, or, you know, the like Alexander Majors on State Line, you know, where you kind of see, and also they have a lot more land. That's something that we don't, we're kind of on a little bit of a postage stamp. We have a yard. So like for the fundraiser, it's going to be tight quarters. And I mean, like, you're going to be right there. You know, you might, you know, get a little grease on you from Andy's, you know, spatula, because it's going to be that intimate, you know? So the neighborhood itself, I mean, just in general, I think all the time, how much I've learned over the past decade or so about Kansas City history, how many things I drove by and knew nothing about. And then I find out some weird fact and start looking into it, and I'm just blown away.
So this house is the oldest two-story brick house in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It also has tales of the Battle of Westport from the Civil War, which was one of the biggest, most pivotal battles of the Civil War. 30,000 troops, I believe.
And it was the largest battle west of the Mississippi River.
Correct. Tell me something I don't know about the Battle of Westport.
Well, that's a good one. There's a lot of things. I think that what is probably the most fascinating to me, and this is something I didn't know either, you know, when you died on the battlefield, you know, you first, we all know that things start to smell pretty quickly. So they buried on the spot for the most part, but then they reinterred later. So one of the things that they did is that right at the corner, where, do you guys know where Soil Service is on Troost? Like right just to the south of Forest Hill Cemetery.
Okay.
So just like not the cemetery, but outside of the cemetery. So what this group of people or this man donated land, and actually they went and moved the Confederate soldiers to the cemetery. And then they moved them again. So they were actually moved more than once. So the Battle of Westport soldiers were moved, the Confederates, to this cemetery. And they moved them again when Joe Shelby was buried at Forest Hill, and they built a Confederate monument. It's the only Confederate monument in Kansas City. It's on private property though. And it's inside of the, you know, it's literally a grave marker. And so Joe Shelby, who was a big general at the time during the Battle of Westport, under Price, they ended up reinterring again. So these people were buried three times, and they reinterred them all into Forest Hill Cemetery. So a lot of people don't realize, you know, about, like, several unknown soldiers too. So this happened in the 19-teens when they started moving the graves.
Wow.
Right. Weird. So like if you're like getting your garden supplies, I'm not sure they got all the parts, you know. I mean, seriously, well, I think about that all the time.
We have the little cemeteries all around us. We were talking the other day, I was at 95th and Mission Road, and there's that Billy's grocery store is over there, and Meet Mitch is over there.
Yeah.
And in the parking lot of the grocery store, mm-hmm. there's this little cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is in the middle of a parking lot.
There's the one on Shawnee Mission Parkway in Fairway.
Yep.
There's also two grave markers out front of Good Sense on Johnson Drive.
There's a lot of those. Sometimes this happens because there's one also. Everyone's going to be like now going and like doing drop pins on these different locations. But there's also one at like right outside of Waterford, like the subdivision in Leawood.
That's
and
right.
So there's that farm that's still preserved. It's still owned by the Stewart, the family. And so you'll know it if you're Red Barn. It's on Mission Road in basically what is that? Like 132nd Street. Mm-hmm. And there's a grave marker right there in the front yard. But here's that one is a good example. This happened quite a bit. Is old family farms. They used to just bury, you know, they had family cemeteries. And so that as Kansas City got bigger and land got worth more, what they did, they mostly reinterred their people and sometimes just left the headstones, which I know seems strange, but that sometimes is the case, which I believe is the case with the one in front of, you know, in Leawood, in the middle of Leawood. It happens all the time. They're all over the place, buried in woods. I did a hike. This was a bad idea. I don't recommend this, but I was looking for this cemetery.
We don't recommend hiking either.
I don't hike, but I was looking for an old cemetery in Martin City, and it's actually now sandwiched in between railroad tracks in Martin City.
Oh, wow.
So the railroad back in the 1950s, right before the tornado, which, you know, the 69th anniversary of the Ruskin Heights tornado was yesterday.
Yeah.
Right there, this old family cemetery, and it was large, you know, it was pretty big, like with a stone wall around it. The railroad just smacked it right in the, so it's inaccessible. So I walked the tracks. I went, I took a friend with me, so I wasn't, you know, just in case. And, hopped over and, like, literally started digging through this old cemetery. I mean, there's more than you think out there still. And nobody, you know, whether it's family maybe moves away or how somebody let that happen, I don't have the answers to that. But I always want people to be aware of your surroundings, because I always say, call me before you dig. You know how you're supposed to call, like, the power company?
Yeah, call Diane before you dig.
You never know what you might find.
But that just goes back to my point that the history is literally all around us, and how many times we're driving by. And I don't, wherever you're listening right now, you guys, if you're in Lee's Summit or Independence, there is history all around us, and it fills your brain. Yeah. And that's why we love having you on.
It's just random facts. I'm full of useless random information. But if you can get people, I think people care. Like Tammy Reed, she is not a glorified historian. She loves quilts. That's where she started, is she collects old quilts. But Coach is a huge history buff. And so this house was a natural fit because they kind of didn't live in the neighborhood, but nearby. Yeah. And so, like, you find something that you're interested in, and if you could just tell things in a relatable way instead of having to memorize some facts and dates, people might actually care about the stuff around them, right?
Way more interesting.
Way more interesting, which is why I choose these random stories to tell people.
What's the website again?
It's westporthistoricalkc.org, and then you can click on events. And it's May 30th, so a week from Saturday from 2 to 5, a little afternoon affair. We got Jay Rieger cocktails, thanks to Jay Rieger. And Hy-Vee was going to be there with the sous chef in the back, of automatic shift of helping Coach, you know, get the food out and all that. It's going to be awesome.
One of my favorite stories that we stumbled across because a friend of mine found the grave marker was the grave marker that just said, horse thief.
May he rest in peace.
Horse thief. May he rest in peace. And I still have that photo up here on my computer here in the studio, because back in the day, they strung you up for crimes like that.
That's vigilante justice.
Yes, and it that's
well, don't go stealing a horse.
That's what it says.
That's your livelihood, a horse, you know. But yeah, that story, I mean, that was one of those things. I grew up right down the street from there. So
remind everyone where that is located. It was my friend Brian.
Yeah.
Our friend Brian Shelton, the one that found it.
It's near Martin City. It's just south of Martin City. So on Santa Fe Trail, there's a street where I say the old Hy-Vee was in Leawood. Basically at 100, it's about 121st and State Line, in between State Line and Warnell. And it's the new Santa Fe Cemetery. And if you go in there, it's very well maintained. If you go into the back corner, you'll see the granite marker that says horse thief, 1898, I believe, is the date they gave, which is not true, the date. But it sounded good at the time when they gave it that date.
So you are an historian. Give me a story about Kansas City that you love the most that we have never heard.
I think probably the one that probably gets the most attention, or I think probably took the most research to do. I wrote my thesis about William Gillis, who was one of the original founders of Kansas City. And he was one of those guys that was real elusive. He was a slaveholder involved in Indian removal a bit. So he's real popular today.
Right.
But I was fascinated because there wasn't a bunch out there about him. But you had Gillis Street, and you had the Gillis, there was Gillis Opera House, and then there was a Gillis Orphan Asylum, which is now, it's still functioning essentially, but under a different program. And so I was really fascinated with him. And so I started digging around about him. And not only did I learn about enslavement and things like that, but I found out, like, they always called him a bachelor, that he actually had two Indian wives, and then that he had children.
Wow.
And so there was a big contestation of his will after he died, you know, his property, because he was the richest guy in Kansas City. He died in 1869.
What was his name?
William Gillis. And he died in 1869. And so there were all these depositions that the State Historical Society still had. And they even imposed their, the formerly enslaved. So I was able to track the names and what happened to all these people, learn more about it, you know, Indian removal. And if you've heard of, like, Troost Avenue, everybody talks about Troost and how he was a slaveholder. Well, William Gillis's niece married Benoist Troost, who is where Troost Avenue is named after. And she was not a very nice lady. So I'm really fascinated with that. And probably my biggest thing is another one that is that isn't well or hasn't been really investigated as much until I did it was Pearl Hill. So Kansas City, downtown Kansas City, where it is, the original plat of Kansas City. If you notice, if you are downtown, where's First Street? And I'm not talking about Riverfront, like right in front, like River Market. There is no First Street.
That's interesting. It never occurred to me.
Right. It starts at third, second, and a little bit of third. And the reason First Street now continues on when you go toward the stadium, you know, like that way there is a First Street. But I'm talking about the original.
Right by we're not supposed to start at zero.
Where you start at the riverfront, which would be the levee, all that got bulldozed. And I don't mean bulldozed, really. It got carved out by Irish immigrants. And so we lost First Street. And First Street was called Pearl Hill because it's where all the rich people lived. So John McCoy, founder of Westport in Kansas City, lived on Pearl Hill. Berenice Shoto family, you know, everybody knows the Shoto. They all lived on Pearl Hill. And then all those mansions got torn down because they literally leveled Kansas City so they could actually build a city here. And that all happened starting in the 1850s. It was the first time Irish immigration actually came to Kansas City for the most part.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that is one, like, so my students even have joked with me. I love when they can make an inside joke. And they said, like, I don't know, Miss Houston, where do you think the bus is? I think it might be on First Street.
Your stories are fascinating. I love listening to you talk.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, tell my students that.
We'll do it. And then we'll post all of the information about the burgers and brats with Coach Reed and his wife and all of that on our social media channels. Because you're only doing like 100 tickets or something, aren't you?
Yeah, we did. We actually sold out a VIP. There's more information on the website about what the VIP was. But again, the yard is not that big. This is like, imagine your backyard and you're having and Coach is on the grill.
Like I could throw a football and hit Coach Reed.
100%. Let's not do that though.
But I could if I wanted to.
Yes. And so it's going to be a very intimate event. And so we still have regular admission tickets available. You'll still be right there. It's going to be amazing.
Wow.
Unforgettable event. It's a one-of-a-kind thing. So I hope people come out.
Diane Houston, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Love your stories. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. All right, let's have a little quiz. You know I love these.
Yes. Is it history?
No.
Is it geography?
Sort of, kind of, but not really. It's more financial.
You and your geography. All right.
The richest countries in the world by GDP per capita. So the country makes X number of dollars, generates X number of dollars, and the people in that country financially benefit because of that.
Saudi Arabia.
Not even in the top 15.
I don't know, France.
Negative, Ghost Rider. Your pattern is full.
Is the United States on the list?
Yes, it is number 7.
We are number 7.
Mm-hmm. With the GDP per capita of $92,000.
Is it something crazy like Monaco?
Negative.
Sweden. Switzerland.
Well, hang on. Switzerland, number 3?
Yes.
Sweden, number 14.
The prompt is GDP per capita.
That's correct.
Singapore.
Number 5.
UAE?
No.
What?
Nope.
Italy.
Qatar.
No.
Yeah, I was thinking Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Like,
not a single, I take that back. There is one.
Jordan?
There is one Middle Eastern country.
Jordan.
No.
Israel?
The only Middle Eastern country is Qatar at number 11.
All right, put me out of my misery.
Okay, I'm just going to do the top 10.
Okay.
Number 10 is Macau. Number 9 is Holland. Number 8 is Denmark. Number 7, United States. Number 6, Norway. Number 5, Singapore. Number 4, Iceland. Number 3,
Iceland.
Mm-hmm. Number 3, Switzerland. Number 2, Ireland. And number 1, tiny little country, Luxembourg.
I was thinking Luxembourg. Yeah.
Sweet little Luxembourg.
Look at you.
I was trying to think super small countries with a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I am surprised UAE is not on there.
I'm surprised Saudi Arabia is not on there. UAE. What was the other? There's another tiny country over there.
I got nothing.
Escapes me at the moment. So anyway. Black bear has been spotted in a southeast Kansas neighborhood.
Yes, did you see the video? Oh, he's just doped. He's just running through.
What's he saying?
Running through front yards.
Authorities in Chanute are warning residents to be on the lookout for a black bear that has been spotted in the area. The warning comes after Chanute resident Ben Smith provided the video from his Ring camera showing a small black bear walking around his house Tuesday night at 10:40. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in exactly 2 minutes.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.